Okay, so title of these lectures are ZBrains 101, and today we have 101A. ZBrains are an interesting construction that combines string theory and gauge theory in a very elegant way. And I estimate that there are around 1,000 papers now on ZBrains and string duality. The aim of these lectures is obviously not to cover all that, but it's a very modest goal. The goal is to show how the ADHM construction of instantons which to me as a graduate student looked like some incredibly weird linear algebra how the ADHM construction of instantons is extremely natural. And in particular, ZBrains and string theory gives an interesting set of answers to the question of what happens to a small instanton. And therefore, it's bound to have some important applications in geometry. So that's the goal. I want to give a warning to physicists that this talk and the next talk are primarily directed at mathematicians who have not thought much about ZBrains before. I'm also omitting many topics. And finally, I prepared these in a hurry, so there are probably all sorts of glitches in notation and things like that. So I thought I would prepare a list of notation. You can hand that around. So that if you get lost or if I start using two notations for the same thing, you can call me on it. No, and the final thing is, at several points in the lecture, I'm going to be following arguments which you can find in two reviews on ZBrains, Chowdhury, Johnson, and Polchinski wrote some notes on ZBrains, and also Polchinski has a very nice set of lectures called TOSI lectures on ZBrains. And you can find much more material there and also references. I basically won't be giving references in these talks, although the notes will be available. I did write up some notes. Okay. So the first thing we want to do is discuss the open bosonic string and its space-time interpretation. So an open string for me is a map from an interval. I is the interval from 0 to pi, and it's a map x mu into Minkowski space. So Minkowski space with one time and S space dimensions is denoted that way. And if I have a map, from the interval into Minkowski space, then that looks like some open string. And then that string is going to evolve, and therefore I should introduce a world sheet, which I'll call sigma. And it will map to a world sheet propagating in space-time in the usual way. So we'll have sigma 1 runs between 0 and pi, and sigma 2 is the time direction. You can do Euclidean world sheet or Minkowskian world sheet. Goes from minus infinity to infinity. And the string action, is 1 over 4 pi L string squared, integral over the world sheet, partial x, partial bar x. The brackets indicate the Minkowski inner product, partial and partial bar, obtained using the complex structure on the world sheet sigma. So already, we see something very interesting. X has dimensions of length. The action is dimensionless. And so string theory is a theory with a scale. And so we have to introduce a fundamental scale called the string scale. Now, because we have world sheets that have boundaries, and because we want to have a well-defined variational problem, we're going to have to choose some boundary conditions. So if we vary the action, then, of course, there's a a term that looks like that, integral over the world sheet. But then because of the integration by parts, and there's, I guess, a minus sign here, because of the integration by parts, there's going to be an integral delta x d normal of x on the boundary of the world sheet. And for a good variational principle, this must be equal to 0. Now, the normal direction is just the sigma 1 direction, the spatial direction. And therefore, there are two possible boundary conditions. There is the Neumann boundary condition, which I'll always denote by N, which is d sigma of x evaluated on the boundary equals 0, and the Dirichlet boundary condition, which is the variation of x on the boundary is equal to 0. And you note that you have a choice of d or n for both sides of the interval, for sigma 1 equals 0 or pi. So altogether, four choices. Now, for the moment, take the choice n, n. Take Neumann, at both ends of the interval for all coordinates. Okay? Because the first thing I want to do for you is show you how, from a certain conformal field theory, we get a space-time field theory. So we have a conformal field theory, and the quantization, the state space of the conformal field theory, is obtained in a in the standard way using oscillators. So to get the state space, we expand the solution of the equation of motion. And because I have Neumann boundary conditions, I have cosine m sigma 1. When I use Euclidean signature world sheets, I use sigma 2. If I have Minkowskian signature world sheets, I use tau. And the Wick rotation is something like that. All right, so as everybody knows, and this is a sum over m not 0, not equal to 0, and there's a factor of I here. Okay, so as everybody knows, the Poisson brackets that come from this algebra give me Heisenberg algebra. And what quantization means is that you must choose a representation of the Heisenberg algebra. And to represent that, we have a Fock space, which is defined by a highest weight state called bracket P. And already I've made a blunder. I should have put alpha naught here, but I think you see what I mean. And the Fock space is the span of these states. And then the conformal field theory state space, A, that's going to be my notation for a conformal field theory, is the sum over all momenta of the Fock space. So that's some continuous integral of vector spaces. Now, conformal field theory means many different things to many different people. So many mathematicians found it helpful when Graham Segal gave it a kind of functorial flavor. And you can do the same thing here. I won't give it in all details, but you can do the same kind of things here. You can talk about a category whose objects now include circles, of course, but also intervals, I, and whose morphisms are surfaces. So if we have intervals and a surface between them, then this might be a, this sigma here is a morphism in some category. And then we have a functor from this category to a certain set of vector spaces and transformations between them. So the interval 0 to pi is going to map to my state space A. Yes, absolutely. In order to define the state space, I didn't really need the Minkowskian signature world sheet. You're quite right. And indeed, later on, we're going to want to have various non-trivial topologies, and so we would want the Euclidean signature world sheet for that. That's correct. So the functor is defined by taking intervals to the state space. And to these morphisms, we would associate some kind of linear transformation, which in this case looks like that. Now, by conformal invariance, the information in this object, this linear map phi sub sigma, is contained in the vertex operator correlation functions is contained in vertex operator correlation functions where you have chiral vertex operators inserted on the boundary of the upper half plane, or again by conformal invariance, inserted on the boundary of a disk. And it's the latter way that the physicists generally think about these things. There are the conformal field theory on surfaces with a boundary is a fascinating subject. I don't have time to go into it, but there are very definite rules for how to calculate phi sub sigma or the correlation functions. What I want to press on to is the space-time interpretation of this conformal field theory. when I have a map into Minkowski space and I form that the action, which is still on the board, you see that the theory has a global symmetry, which is the Poincaré group, P1S, that Dan was talking about before. So our state spaces are going to be some kind of representation of P1S. However, because time has a negative signature, because the signature of space-time is, for me, minus 1 plus 1 to the S, which is the opposite of Dan's, but this is the right one, because it's the time-like oscillators which give you problems with unitarity. So the way you take care of that problem to get a unitary representation of the Poincaré group is you take Lie algebra cohomology, or what the physicists call BRST cohomology, which is the same thing as Lie algebra cohomology, semi-infinite Lie algebra cohomology, for the Virasoro algebra. The Virasoro algebra does act on this space curly A, and so I can consider the Lie algebra cohomology and define curly H, which is the cohomology of this space. Now, in forming the cohomology, the way the physicists think about it is they introduce what they call ghosts, which is another conformal field theory. We're not going to use the ghosts very much, so if you don't follow that, don't worry. D is the Chevalier-Eilenberg differential. And here? Yes, thank you. Excellent. Right. Because we're doing the cohomology of an infinite dimensional Lie algebra, as Pierre quite rightly points out, D squared, if and only if S is 25, S is the number of space dimensions, in the bosonic case, and S is equal to 9 in the supersymmetric case. So maybe now is a good time for me to make the following comment. In this talk, I'm going to be kind of coy about how many dimensions I'm in. And I'm going to use S as an arbitrary spatial dimension. Really, I have to be working in 10 space dimensions for some of the things I'm going to say to be valid, because I'll want to invoke supersymmetry of 10 dimensions at various points. So if you like, just think of the number of dimensions as S as 1, 9, and in this talk, I've simply suppressed all fermions, both on the world sheet and in space-time. Okay. Now, if you apply this kind of functor to not A, but curly H, then what you get is a set of maps, we could call them phi sigma twiddle, from H tensor H to H tensor H, and this is what physicists call the S matrix. Now, the fact is that H is a completely reducible unitary representation of the Poincaré group. And in field theory, a particle is the same thing as a unitary irrep of the Poincaré group, as Dan reviewed. Yes, that's right. It's right, labeled by the mass and the total spin. in the sense that Dan defined, and some other degeneracies, but finite. So the space is graded by the L0 from the Virasoro algebra, and each graded, and each space of definite grading is a finite dimension, is a representation of the Poincaré group who, based on a finite dimensional representation of the little group. Okay. And indeed, let me say that. What is the spectrum? The spectrum, which follows from taking this Virasoro cohomology, has e squared minus p squared equals a number operator times L string to the minus 2. So this notation here is an operator which is a number operator of various types. The only thing that's important for us is that its spectrum is the natural numbers and zero. In particular, of great interest for us are the level one states at mass squared equals zero. These look like this. And the conditions of the Lie algebra cohomology, the BRST cohomology, are the following. The kernel of B means that epsilon dot P is 0, and P squared is 0, of course. And very interesting is the condition of dividing by the image of D, which you do to take cohomology. And what identification by the image of D does is identify epsilon with epsilon plus x times p. So this is exactly the representation of a massless vector boson, which has a gauge invariance. So again, in local field theory, again, I quote a principle of field theory, that particles in quantum field theory are described by fields. And the field that we have here is A, which is a connection on space-time with the Abelian gauge group. So when you translate this to the language of fields, you discover the gauge invariance. Well, D. Okay. Now, I said there's an S matrix and that particles can be described by fields. And we see that there's an infinite power of particles. So a natural question is there a field theory which once and for all describes all of these particles? And if you calculate the S matrix by the rules of field theory, it produces this S matrix. That's the problem of string field theory, which is not at all solved. But for the case of the tree-level open bosonic string, which is the case that we're discussing, Witten made a very elegant proposal about 10 years ago. You can say the following, tree level. What tree level means is that I don't allow any handles in these morphisms. Because of the BRST cohomology, that factors out of the problem. And when you do, when you calculate the S matrix, the conformal factor does not enter if you're in 25 dimensions. I'm not quite sure what the question is. It's a certain map. Yes, that's right. That's quite right. And what you do is you integrate over that moduli space with a certain measure. That measure is obtained by thinking carefully about these ghosts. So, it will. That's a very interesting question. So let me answer it in a special case, which illustrates the general case. So the first time we get a modulus is when we have four of these. Now, I'm sorry, let me put them on the upper half plane. Because without loss of generality, I can put one at 0, one at 1, and one at infinity, and the last guy can go between 0 and 1. So now what you do is you have an integral, your S matrix for this very particular sector of Hilbert space is an integral dx from 0 to 1 of x to the k1 dot k2 times the string scale squared, 1 minus x string squared k1 dot k3, where these are the momenta of the various particles. Times a polynomial in x, a rational function of x, and that rational function depends on exactly which states I'm choosing out of here. But the problematic factors are these. Now, actually, this doesn't converge, but if you analytically continue in these variables, you get a convergent integral, which is, of course, the beta function or some cousin of the beta function. And then that defines the S matrix. What's the matter? Yes, David's right. I have to sum over orderings. Yes, that's right. There's a sum of three terms. I guess x could go here, here, or here, right? And I have to sum those three. Okay, so that's a little bit about what the S matrix looks like. Now I want to return to the question of string field theory, and simply remind you of what Witten's answer was. I'm going rather too slow. Okay. If I'm really going too slow, please let me know. I can certainly speed up. Okay. So, what was Witten's proposal for the open string field theory? Well, I seem to have erased it. But let me remind you that we had the off-shell state space, dp pos all Fock spaces tensor ghosts, and a string field was simply an object psi, an element of this space. And what we want to do is we want to write an action principle for psi. So what he pointed out was that there are three ingredients you need. Psi A has a grading and by ghost number, and you need a graded differential. It's the same grading as in the Lie algebra cohomology. D goes from A to A if D squared equals 0. Degree of D is 1. You need, very importantly, you need a product. He called it star from A tensor A to A. And that was defined by one of these morphisms. And finally, you need an integration to the complex numbers. And the action that works and that correctly produces that S matrix is rather startling. The action S of psi is the integral of psi d psi plus 2/3 psi psi psi. Return Simon's one. Now, yes? Oh, no, no. You know there are problems with the star product at when you add closed string loops. And besides, you're going to generate closed strings, as I will in a moment. And then you need closed string field theory. And this
But you generate the closed string asymptotic space, you certainly can reproduce on diagrams of closed string asymptotic.
With arbitrary loops? Okay. Maybe I was being overly conservative. I seem to remember some problems with the star product, but maybe. Oh, I'm thinking of the supersymmetric case. I beg your pardon. In fact, you wrote a paper about that. That's right. Yeah. Right. Sorry about that, Steve. Yes. Okay, I was being overly conservative. I didn't say anything wrong. Okay. But still, I would still say that string field theory formulating string field theory really right is an open problem. Well, it's definitely an action. You see, let's go back to our key example, which is the massless the photon. So if you take psi equals the integral dp of A mu of p alpha minus 1 on p, okay, this is an example of this is an element of this space, no questions. So now you work out, what is this? And it's beautiful. It's f mu nu plus L string squared corrections. Now, we all agree that this is an action. So this is just some version. This is a perturbation on Maxwell's action. That's right. So you have an infinite series of corrections. Very important, because string theory is a theory with a scale. You're doing a momentum expansion here, and there is some set of corrections encoded in this action, such that you will reproduce the string scattering amplitude. No, but that's not the route I'm going. That's an interesting question, but that's not the route I'm going. The reason I dug this up is to make a little smoother the connection between the language of conformal field theory and what's for us very important, which is the space-time physics, and specifically the space-time physics of Yang-Mills theory. And it proceeds nicely through this route. And then the other major point is that these three axioms allow a modification. And this is really my main point in this little section about string field theory, which is called the Chan-Payton construction. and which is absolutely essential to everything in D-brains. And that Chan-Payton construction simply consists of modifying the algebra A by taking a tensor product with the matrices n by n over the complex numbers. The differential commutes with that. The star product is simply the non-commutative product of matrices. And the integration is the trace. So in terms of our So star product is simply A times B, product of matrices, integral of the trace. The modification of these morphisms is the kind of obvious one. So if phi are elements, so if phi I are elements of A, and lambda I are elements of the matrices n by n, then you could ask me, what do I do with this? And so on. And the answer is you just take a product. Times the trace of the product of matrices. This is a definition. Okay. And then the analog of this statement up here, that you get Maxwell's action, well, sorry. And then the analog of this statement up here is, first of all, the Chern-Simons action, of course, simply has a trace on all the sides. And the analog of the Maxwell's action being the low energy action is just that S is the trace of F wedge star F plus corrections, where F is now the non-abelian field strength. So the... let me come to that in just a second. That's a very good point. So the main news is that I'm getting... non-abelian gauge theory from the Chan-Payton construction. It definitely defines these uses these surfaces because I have to define a product on A. Right? So, and the way I define a product on A is I essentially use this. Now several points came up at once. So, David mentioned something very important, which is that so far I've got GLN. And let's notice that these intervals are oriented. The intervals are oriented. And because of that, curly A has an antilinear involution. Which is essentially reversing the orientation. And in string field theory, we can and should put a reality condition psi star of sigma equals psi of pi minus sigma, if you like, on the theory without Chan-Payton indices, And with Chan Peyton indices, the matrices on C become the UN, which is the Lie algebra of n by n anti-Hermitian matrices. And so we reach our first main conclusion, that the open bosonic string with the Chan-Peyton construction has a space-time interpretation of UN non-abelian gauge theory plus corrections, string theory corrections, which are small at low energy. Okay, now let me remind you that, are there any questions about that? That's an important stopping point. Okay. Now let me remind you that at the very beginning I showed you there were Dirichlet and Neumann boundary conditions. And I said, let's put Neumann on all of the space-time coordinates. Now I'm going to relax that. So the next thing to do is look at Dirichlet and Neumann together. Okay, so the first thing we should do is we should interpret what that means in terms of pictures. So we have x mu, we have sigma, here sigma equals 0, here sigma equals pi. We have a choice of d or n here and d or n here. Let's make the following choice. Along the coordinate directions, 0, 1, up to p, I will choose Neumann. And along the coordinate directions p plus 1 up to s, this is the dimension of space, I will choose Dirichlet. So let's just stop and draw a picture of that. Here's space-time. Here's direction 0, 1, up to p. Here's directions p plus 1 up to s. So because I have Dirichlet boundary conditions at the beginning of my strings have to start from there. And because I have Dirichlet boundary conditions at the end of the string, they must end there. So you see, you have a picture now. We're going to be developing the space-time interpretation of these conformal field theories. And the first thing we see is that there are some hyperplanes. And maybe you should note right away at the very beginning that an interesting special case of this picture here is where x1 equals x2. And then you have strings oriented, by the way, which begin and end on that hyperplane. Affine hyperplane? Oh, right. Thank you. Yeah. Right. So, in the notation list, there's a terminology error. In the notation list, I say that B sub P, this is an example of what I mean by B sub P. I say that B sub P is a coordinate hyperplane of spatial dimension P. I guess I mean a, what do you call it? But it's always along the coordinate direction. So a coordinate subspace sounds terrible. Anyway, it's B sub P is a linear space of P spatial dimensions, perhaps translated from the origin. That means codimension one. Well, you see, I mean, with mathematics, you have to say what you mean. So, and try and mean what you say. So let's it's a good idea to get some practice with this. It's trivial, but it's still worth taking a few minutes to think about it. Let's choose boundary conditions which are mixed Neumann and Dirichlet. So now I'm going to do the following. At sigma equals 0 and sigma equals pi, I'm going to choose, now again, 0, 1 up to p, p plus 1 up to p prime, and p prime plus 1 up to s. It's now going to have boundary conditions Neumann-Neumann, Dirichlet-Neumann, Dirichlet-Dirichlet. What does that look like? Well, you see, now that I've divided up space this way, I should draw a picture of space-time that looks a little bit like this. And there's going to be one subspace, coordinate subspace, like that. And there's going to be another one like that. So this is direction 0, 1 up to p. This is directions p plus 1 up to p prime. And then this is directions p prime plus 1 up to s. And so you see my strings are beginning here and then moving through space and ending here. So that's a typical picture of a string with those mixed boundary conditions. And these subspaces can, of course, be different dimensions, right? This guy is B sub P. This guy is B sub P prime. So the conclusion of this is that choices of boundary conditions are equivalent to ordered pairs B1, B2 of, well, my notes say coordinate hyperplanes, coordinate subspaces of Minkowski space. And I'll denote the corresponding conformal field theory. To now develop a conformal field theory with these boundary conditions, I'll denote the state space A sub B1, B2 with those boundary conditions. And now that we understand that, what we want to do is give a space-time interpretation of that conformal field theory, analogous to the non-abelian gauge theory that we found for the previous case. Sorry? That they're orthogonal? Yes, it is. Yes, it is important because eventually I'm going to bring supersymmetry into the game. And in order to justify many of the things I want to say, I need to understand that there is some supersymmetry in the problem. And that means that you can't have these things are going to become D brains in a little bit. You can't have these D brains just pointing any old which way. So they are going to have to be at long coordinate planes. You can get fancier and start rotating them, but you have to rotate them with care. So, yes, it's important.
Yeah.
Pardon?
There are translations that leave the configuration here.
Yeah, but the relative orientation is important. It would not be good if I took that line there and tilted it so that it intersected the plane. And you don't see that at all from what I've said, because I haven't mentioned supersymmetry or... What do you mean? I have mixed boundary conditions. There are four choices. There's DN and ND, but ND is just a string which goes the other direction. You mean if I rotate one of the... Yeah, I can't do that. I can't rotate one relative to the other. Okay, so to repeat, the next game here is to answer the question, what is the space-time physics of associated to A sub B1, B2? And there are really two answers to that question. So let's get started on the first one. Okay. So to start with, set B1 equals B2. In other words, we're now taking that special case right up there. And that'll keep us busy for a while. So I remind you that with the Neumann-Neumann boundary conditions, we had x of sigma and tau is little x plus p tau plus x oscillator. Well, maybe I should write that out. Plus I sum alpha m over m cosine n sigma 1, m sigma 1 I m tau. Now with Dirichlet, yeah, with Dirichlet, we're going to have x of sigma and tau is now x plus, in general, x 0, 1 minus x 0, 2 times sigma plus I times the sum of sine. And maybe for later reference, since I won't want to say it again, with Dirichlet-Neumann, you have no zero mode here, but you have half integer modings here. Okay, so those are the kinds of oscillator expansions that we're going to have. And now, quantization implies a Heisenberg algebra as usual. And now we've got to represent that Heisenberg algebra. So let's choose our coordinate plane B, which is B1 equals B2, to be the set of X such that XA equals some X0A for A equals P plus 1 up to S. We have to choose the highest weight state. So our highest weight state is labeled by a momentum K and a position, let me emphasize that, K mu and a position X naught. Being a highest weight state, it's annihilated by the positive frequency oscillators. It has well-defined momentum in those directions. Quite a correct question. I was going to say that later, but I can say it now. The space-time physics is clearly going to involve representations of SO 1 comma P times SO D sub T, which in your notation list is the number of transverse directions. So we're going to get representations of that group, which is a subgroup of the Poincaré group. But I thought I would first just quantize the conformal field theory. So let me continue to do that. So I, what's the matter? Yeah. So what I'm doing is I'm simply quantizing the conformal field theory. So I need to choose the highest weight space. And so here there's a position zero mode for the directions p plus 1 up to s. And therefore, A sub BB is going to be equal to a direct sum now over P plus 1K of the Fock space labeled by K and X. And this is significant, even though trivial. It's significant that I can say where a D-brain is. You see, these spaces now naturally come in families over the transverse space. Unlike the previous case, these conformal field theories are labeled by a point in space-time. In the transverse space, let's call that X naught. Okay, the physics of that is the D-brain is big and heavy and can be localized, but you can also just see that Dirichlet boundary conditions, of course, mean that you have a family of conformal filters. Now, continuing with the question, what is the space-time physics? Let's look at this Lorentz symmetry, or this symmetry. So now we have this global symmetry. And we ask, how is it realized? So as before, we look at the on-shell states. Again, we look at the Virasoro cohomology. And again, this forms a completely reducible unitary representation of, let's call it curly G. Sorry? Yes, so far I've only mentioned X. And everything I say carries over verbatim to the superstring. But then I'll also have to consider boundary conditions on the world sheet fermions. And that's next lecture. Yeah?
What about the possibility that the
That's coming. That's coming. Just as I first did the single oscillator with Neumann-Neumann boundary conditions, yes, I will tensor in the Chan-Payton indices. The transverse translation group moves the D-branes. Sorry. Look, the D-brain, okay, here's the D-brain sticking out of the plane. Okay? I can rotate around there. Okay, so that's actually a symmetry of the situation. Okay. Okay, so so what's the space-time interpretation? So the first point is that the only momentum is mu equals 0, 1, up to p. And we only have Poincaré symmetry, p sub 1, p. So one could conclude from that that we are discussing a field theory of particles confined to B sub p. We're discussing quantum field theory of particles, of an infinite sour of particles in p plus 1 dimensions, and SO d sub t is just a global symmetry of the theory. Now, among those particles, as always, the most important one are the m squared equals 0 particles. What are they? Well, again, you go through these oscillator business, and you see there are two kinds. The space at level n equals 1 is spanned by alpha minus 1 mu, acting on this mixed highest weight state, and alpha minus 1 a, acting on this highest weight state. And I could introduce these wave functions like that. But now, the image of D only identifies epsilon mu with epsilon mu plus xk mu, and epsilon a is gauge invariant. So the conclusion is that the representation of the massless little group with global symmetry is a vector particle plus a scalar particle in the fundamental of the global symmetry. Pardon? No, I really mean direct sum. It's a direct sum of representations. I see. I didn't say that very clearly. So I'm talking about the Poincaré, the massless little group is SOP minus 1 times SOD sub t. I'm including the global symmetry in the mass, in the little group, the definition of the little group. Perhaps that was a poor choice of terminology. As a representation of this group, my particles are there. And the field theory interpretation is that what we have is a gauge field, A mu of x, where A is a connection on the world volume of the brain, and a set of scalar fields, phi A of x, where phi A is, well, okay, a scalar field. So W sub P plus 1 is the world volume of the P brain. There's a very unfortunate choice of terminology. P stands for spatial dimensions. We have to include time, and so that's the world volume. Okay? Now, the Chan-Payton construction. Yeah. Good. X, that's included in this notation. X lives here. And so the X is confined. That's this statement up here. We are discussing field theory of particles confined to B sub P. Those particles move in time, and therefore the fields describing those particles are defined on this P plus one dimensional subspace of Minkowski space. Okay, now let's, including the Chan-Payton indices. Well, that's a complicated question. That's exactly the point of the next section. There is a field theory in the ambient space, and the really interesting thing is how these field theories in the ambient space and on the brain are related to each other. Okay, so how do we include Chan-Payton indices? Well, I've already indicated everything that we really need to do. Where are my states? Here, I would simply, let me just say it in words, I would take a tensor product with an element of the Lie algebra of UN on those states, and with the quantum fields, I therefore take a tensor product with the Lie algebra of UN, and my index notation for that will be something like this, where I and J will run from 1 up to N, and so I will have fields in that space. So the conclusion is, What? Pardon? Yeah, because there's no problem imposing the Dirichlet boundary conditions. And indeed, that's my next point. That construction goes through exactly, and the low energy of field theory coming from that construction will have an action which is nothing other than the trace, well, let me emphasize it, the integral in P plus 1 dimensions over W sub T plus 1 of the trace of F mu nu squared plus the trace of D mu phi A squared plus the trace of phi A phi B squared sum over A less than B, which is nothing other than, see, phi A is an adjoint valued scalar field. So this is an adjoint Higgs field. And the low energy action, of course, there's always corrections. The low energy action here is just the dimensional reduction of the Yang mills. Yes. And you see that follows immediately because of the structure of these Fock spaces. Because of the fact that this Fock space is simply an integral over K of X. Yes, Ralph.
Well, So AU will be connected for what circuit? For what group?
So if I include the Chan-Payton indices, then my wave functions are valued in the Lie algebra of the n by n anti-Hermitian matrices. Okay? And then I make a leap, which is why it's not clear. I make a leap to field theory from the particle representation. And that leap is that the fields also are have this tensor, or take values in the n by n anti-Hermitian matrices. Okay? And then there's really the leading term in the action is just determined by locality and Lorentz invariance and gauge invariance. It just has to be this. Well, this is anti-symmetric, so if I didn't put A less than B, then it wouldn't matter up to a factor of 2. By the way, I should have said, in this talk, 2 and pi and all of that is equal to 1. So, yeah, David, I misspoke. But this is what you'll get. That's obvious from the vertex operator calculations because all you because you're making such a mild change on the Fox basis. Because these lectures were prepared in a great hurry, and I could, I am sure, and they actually could be improved quite a bit. Yeah, maybe I could have done that. Okay. So let me stress the conclusion. This the first space-time interpretation of what is the space-time interpretation of this A sub BB. The first interpretation is that at low energies, it's a quantum field theory confined to the brain, and it's described by a certain Yang-Mills Higgs system coming from dimensional reduction from higher dimensions. And I will call this quantum field theory YM of B sub P. So that's my notation for a certain quantum field theory confined to the brain. Now, I would like to go on and describe the bulk. I'm a little worried about time. What time is it? When do I have to?
You have to get to here.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's kind of hopeless even to get through. Okay. Well, I mean, if people want to hear it, I'm happy to say it. But okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. So the logic of the argument I gave was that I derived the representations of the Poincaré group in terms of certain particles, and then I went to the fields, and then you're quite right. At this point, I'm making a bit of a leap by saying that this is the interactions of the fields. However, it's true that the off-shell state space you see here is a very trivial modification of the off-shell state space in the case with all Neumann-Neumann boundary conditions. And if you think about the vertex operator calculations and calculating the S matrix, for example, the way I started to indicate before, the modifications to that calculation are very mild. Essentially, the only thing they do is they kill the momentum in all of but these directions and fix this position. And so you're led to this plus corrections. Okay. Now, having given that space-time interpretation, I should say it's completely unsatisfactory. It's one way of seeing that. One way of seeing that it's unsatisfactory is to notice that, of course, un is the direct sum of sun, the traceless anti-Hermitian matrices, plus u1. So there's a piece of this theory that just comes right out and is a totally free theory, and is kind of a spectator. This U1 piece is simply described by F wedge star F plus a sum on A of d phi A wedge star d phi A. And these Higgs fields are gauge invariant. Even though I imposed the Chan-Dayton construction, I could always take the trace, and I get these gauge-invariant Higgs fields. Now, when you specify a vacuum of this theory, Yang-Mills of B sub T, that means you have to specify the zero mode of phi A. You have to give it a constant. You see, any old constant will give you a perfectly good vacuum for this free scalar field. So what's the interpretation of the phi sub A's? Well, phi A naught is the position of B sub P in the transverse direction. XA to the brain. Or slightly more accurately, the changes of phi A are the changes of position. There are many ways of understanding that. One is that the brain is breaking. The brain, B sub P here, with P plus 1 to S, is breaking translation invariance perpendicular to the brain. And that's breaking a global symmetry back in the conformal field theory. And these are the Goldstone bosons for that conformal field theory. And so they're conjugate to the momentum transverse to this. So we interpret phi sub A as a position of the brain. Now that has a very important consequence. The consequence is that brains wiggle. Because if you have a zero mode, you also have almost a zero mode. Here's phi A of X. The following field configuration along B sub P is almost a zero mode. But if phi A, so you have to interpret this position as a position in space-time. So if phi A is changing, that means that the brain is moving in space-time. So the brain's actually, the dynamics of the brains implied by the fact that there are these scalar fields is that the brains are actually going to move in space-time. So that means that B sub P is the location of a dynamical object called a Dirichlet P-brain. So so far, B sub P has just been a mathematical coordinate subspace. But now when we consider the quantum field theory on the brain and understand that phi sub A is a position in the external space-time, we see that it was actually the location of a dynamical object, a thing, that you could move around and push and that wiggles. And so the idea is, think about the ocean right out there. And think about the waves on the ocean. So the height of the waves on the ocean is a scalar field. That's a scalar field in 2 plus 1 dimensions whose base space is S2, or actually S2 minus the continents. Okay? And if you want to describe the dynamics of the ocean, you would describe it by at long distances by these effective field theories. There's another reason why this is unsatisfied by the previous space. So we start to see that there's an external dimension. That's right. That's absolutely right. And it would preserve supersymmetry if the Earth, if the ocean were a supersymmetric theory. It would be a BPS state. A smooth ocean would be a BPS state. Okay, so that's the first reason that it was unsatisfactory simply to conclude that we had physics in P plus one dimensions instead of all dimensions. And there's another reason. So a lot of people are asking themselves these days, is A sub B B a consistent theory by itself? In other words, can you just talk about the physics on the D-brain? A lot of people talk about just the physics on the D-brain. But you can see that that can't quite be the whole story. Because consider one of these open strings on this plane, B sub P. Well, clearly, it can move like this. And then if you just use some physical intuition, you might ask, well, why doesn't it just move off? And that's indeed what will happen. A quantum field theorist who's stuck on the D-brain and doing experiments on the D-brain is going to scatter particles on the D-brain. And he's going to observe a lack of unitarity. So all I'm saying is that you have to consider the closed string sector. Wow. Okay, so I think actually I should okay. I'll stop there, and next time I'll tell you how this is interpreted in the closed string sector.
Couldn't you tell this to say that even before that you had a consensus? I mean, there is no theory of the string.
Because of this reason. So, yeah, the open string is the special case where the D-brain fills all of space. So it's already this picture.